Today is Tuesday, December 15th, 2020. This is a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Brian Maytum, spelled M-A-Y-T-U-M, and his daughter Shayna, spelled S-H-A-I-N-A, also Maytum, and M-A-Y-T-U-M. And my name is Tom Martin. Good afternoon, Brian and Shayna. How are you both today?
I am great today.
Good, good. Brian, may we have your permission to record this oral history over the telephone?
Yes.
Thank you. Brian, what year were you born?
I was born in 1950.
Okay. Where were you born?
I was born in Minneapolis.
Okay. What were your parents doing in Minneapolis?
My father was doing the GI Bill. He had finished the he had been in the Great War.
Yes.
And flew bombers, and then he went to the University of the University and learn to be a he became
no worries.
Sorry about that.
No worries. So
he became a
Oh, that's fine. So he met your mother there in college.
Actually, he did not.
Huh.
He met my mother at a USO show.
Okay. Cool.
that's where they became friends and then got married.
Do you have any older or younger brothers or sisters?
I have an older brother.
Uh-huh.
I am the younger brother.
Okay. Nice. And did you grow up then in Minneapolis?
No. I grew up in Littleton.
Oh, okay. When did your family move out to Littleton?
In 1956.
Okay. And do you remember what your dad was doing in Littleton for a job?
Building high-tech airplanes.
Okay. Nice.
And lots of secret equipment at the time. So, this was the days of when nobody knew what it was their father did.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So growing up in Littleton, did you go to high school there as well?
Yes.
Okay.
So I went to Littleton High School.
Did your mom and dad like to camp out when you were growing up?
They didn't really have much to do with the outdoors.
Okay. Station wagon and summer vacations off to the national parks and things like that?
Very little.
Okay. What about you? Did you pal around with your friends in high school and get up into the Front Range or up into the Rocky Mountains there and do any hiking and climbing?
Yes, I did. When I was at the University of Colorado in Boulder.
Okay.
There were lots of opportunities to go up in the mountains and walk around and see lots of wonderful local stuff, check it out and to the degree that my parents never did.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
They were certainly not interested in river running at all.
Okay. Before we get to your river running, what were you studying at the University of Colorado in Boulder?
University of Boulder, I was studying, I tried quite a few things, ultimately got a degree in art.
Okay, nice. Did you work a camera? What kind of art was your specialty?
I was a glass blower.
Oh, wow. How did you get into that?
I found somebody who was blowing glass, and the idea fascinated me. So they were available. They taught me how to do it, and I just kind of worked my way into that part of the art world.
Wow. Who was your mentor? Do you remember who taught you about how to blow glass?
Yes.
Sorry.
I had a mentor by the name of Norman.
Not to worry, we're going to call him Norman.
Okay.
What do you remember? What do you remember about Norman?
Norman was, he was incredibly talented. He went to the University of Norman, Oklahoma. And he was one of these people who was just so talented that I started learning from him, and 3 years later I was still at it because he had so much to teach me.
Nice. Very nice. Did you stay with working with glass then for many years afterwards?
I did.
Very nice. Yeah, that
for 25 years.
Wow. Excellent. That's just beautiful art. So how did you learn to swim, Brian?
I took classes.
Okay.
Learned to swim and take classes, and overall, I hated it. and struggled with the technique of learning how to swim, but ultimately learned and learned how to swim the hard stuff in the they had a swim tank that had a big high tall semicircular building, and so I went there, and my mother kept making me go.
Good for her.
And so then I just went, and I went, and I went, and eventually I learned how to do it.
Nice. Did you participate in any sports at all in high school?
No.
Okay. All right. And so how did you get into river running? What was your first experience with boats and rivers and things like that?
I was at the University of Colorado, and they had classes that you could take where you could learn how to do various river rafting items, such as we went down we fought our way down the and got at a 3,000
is that cubic feet a second?
Yeah, which was really, really high.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And this was one of the local rivers, maybe the, I don't know, the St. Vrain or the Poudre or something, something right there near Littleton?
I was up at the far north end of the, it was on the north end of
I'm thinking maybe the Yampa and Dinosaur National Monument, or the Arkansas River over near Salida, or the Colorado River up Steamboat Springs side. I'm just starting to shoot out rivers here.
Yeah, it is none of those.
Okay, good.
Dad, was it Lador? Didn't you say the first trip you did with them was Lador?
No, it was not Lador.
And the other one I'm thinking, was it Northgate?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and at 3,000 cubic feet per second, Northgate is just screaming fast.
So help me out here, because I'm from Arizona, and you know, we don't have a lot of water here. So when you say Northgate, I'm like, I wonder what river that's on. can you tell me where that is? And Shana, please jump in to help here.
Sure. It's on the North Platte River.
Okay.
Which is undammed, which is kind of novel around here. But it flows out of northern Colorado up near Walden, which is near-ish to Steamboat. And it flows north into Wyoming. And you take out in Saratoga Springs.
So it eventually spins around and goes into the Mississippi then?
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay. And Brian, do you remember roughly what year this would have been? Maybe 1968 or 69 or 70 or 71, something like that?
Yeah, this would have been 69.
Okay. And I'm assuming the water would have been pretty cold.
Yes. Yeah, freezing cold.
Yeah, and this is snow runoff, snow melt runoff. It's usually pretty cold on the North Platte. And 3,000 cubic feet a second, that's, as you say, a lot of water. Was this just a day trip in paddle boats, or were you actually doing an overnight kind of thing?
We were planning on doing an overnight kind of thing. And doing it relatively easily, though the result was that that river at that with that much water in it is I'm saying it's insane. It was really a bad idea. You know, sometimes you'll go do something that was turned out in respect in you know follow up. Was just a bad idea.
And this
was one of those.
Do you remember the names of any of your instructors?
This woman by the name of Tori, who was the teaching the class.
Okay.
It was about, maybe a dozen people in the whole group.
All right. And were you using university boats?
Yes.
Okay. Did any of the boats on that trip decide to, you know, like turn over and turn turtle, as they say? I see, and the water's cold, and the water's fast, and now people who think they are sitting on top of a boat have turned into swimmers. Then what happened?
I took a header into the water, and then nearly drowned, and managed to make my way through that part, and then I got. Can you hear okay with the dog?
It's a little loud.
Okay.
So you nearly drowned.
Yeah. So and then ended up being kind of stuck in a crack in the wall of the river, unable to get out. Finally worked my way. Worked my way through. This was really one of those badly planned river expenses.
Well,
river. I shouldn't have been there. I was basically coming close to swamping mentally. Eventually my friends managed to grab me and pull me up and out of the river so I could find a way out.
So was that one of the, like, okay, we're going to do a bunch of boating in this class, and the first trip we're going to do is Northgate, and then there's going to be more river trips after that in this class, or was the Northgate trip sort of the culmination of all the learning and other things that you did, and it was the one trip for that class?
Actually, they canceled the class.
Okay.
The water level was so high that they didn't think that it was safe.
All right.
So, they had a couple of hot dog guys who thought it would be fun to go out there and, you know, really rip it. For this trip. It wasn't an official trip by the time we got there.
Okay.
So we went on that basis. The place where we could pull out was basically not. You couldn't really reach it.
Oh, so you missed your takeout.
Yeah. And then they, you know, I kind of, injured one of my feet. And they ended up throwing me in the back of the pickup truck and driving me back to Boulder for the EE. We didn't do more than that. We did that much, and even at that, it was much more difficult than anybody had planned for the adventure.
So, Brian, I must ask you, what you went through is typically enough to turn most people away from river running for the rest of their lives. How is it that you stuck with it?
I think there's two different kinds of people, one set of people, they have an opportunity to go out there and do something just really wild, and it's so exciting that they decide to continue.
Nice.
And I was the one who was, you know, this thing was scary, terrifying, really. And I found myself in that position without needing to, but it was enough of a wild experience that I got hooked.
Adversity makes the heart grow fonder. That's good.
Yeah. So I was, you know, I had that experience. It was wild, and the next year, the next season, I decided it was a wild enough experience that I wanted to continue.
Okay. And did you develop a group of friends that sort of wanted to give it a try as well, or how did you, if you weren't in the class, how did you go out and seek more river running the next year?
I started out with another trip down that same river, and it was wild, and I figured out how to run that it was definitely a major experience the next time, real high water, and I went anyway, just to have a really, to finish that experience.
Nice. And how did the second trip go?
I flipped my boat. The pro. I flipped it. I was trying to be careful about where I ran it through and missed.
Okay. So this is an Avon Pro, is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. So had you purchased a boat by then?
Yeah.
How much did that Avon Pro cost you? Do you remember?
In those days, it was $3,200.
Wow. Okay. And did you get a frame and oars and some sort of mechanism to tie the frame to the boat?
Yeah, the whole bit. And I was also selling river raft equipment.
Okay.
To my friends, and so that price, that $3,200 back in those days, was actually relatively inexpensive.
Really? Because I'm thinking 1970. That's a lot of money.
Yeah, this was like 89.
Okay.
In any case, your estimate is good. I'm very good with a businessman.
Cool. Okay.
So I've been good at getting good prices, and I was selling rafting equipment at probably one third of normal price.
Okay. Oh, so that was, if you were selling at wholesale, people were very happy to come buy from you.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is 1970. I'm a little confused on the timeline here. Did you buy your boat then in 1970, 69, 70?
89.
89. Okay. So from 69 to 70, did you keep boating in the 1970s?
I didn't really get heavily into it until the latter part of the 80s.
I'm sorry, but I am going to jump in because, Dad, I do think you're a little bit confused on the timeline at the moment.
Okay.
Because your early canyon trips were in 81 and 83, right? Because by 89, I was already born.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if you got you must have got the pro like 79. Wouldn't
okay.
that make more sense? Because did you take the pro down the canyon, or did you take the Miwok?
My first trip down the canyon was in the Pro.
Okay, so by 81, yeah, you would have had it, right?
Yes.
Okay, so maybe, you know, just a little clarity on the timeline.
No, that's good. There. I'm just wondering, in throughout the 1970s, did you mentioned a Lodore trip? That's Lodore for the transcribers. A Lodore River trip. Do you remember roughly, was that Lodore trip in the early 1970s?
Oh, it was in the late, it was more in the 80s.
Okay. So it sounds like after the harrowing adventure on the North Platte, you kind of gave it a rest for maybe a decade.
I was solid from then on.
Okay. So throughout the 70s, which rivers were you running?
Throughout the 70s, we're really talking the 80s.
Hey, Dad, can I maybe, again, just jump in with the timeline, if that's okay?
Please. Go for it.
I'm just wondering if you're mixing up the 70s and the 80s a little bit, because before you did your Grand Canyon trips, you did a lot of other stuff, right? Like on the Arkansas and the Dolores and Lodore and all, and the Colorado, all of that was before your first Grand Canyon trip, right?
That is correct.
So that would have been in the 70s. Does that make sense, right?
That makes sense.
Okay. If you graduated college in 72 or 73, it seems to me that if all that was happening before you went down the Grand Canyon in 81, this would have had to have been the 70s and not the 80s. Does that seem reasonable?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah, cool. Let's take some of these rivers one at a time. What do you remember about the Arkansas? And did you ever take your boat through the Royal Gorge section, or did you run the numbers farther up, or go through Browns Canyon? I'm just thinking about the different sections of that river.
Okay. I never ran the numbers.
Okay.
Back in those days, that was considered to be a very dangerous river.
Okay.
And in fact, I had a friend who got a real bad concussion running the numbers.
Okay.
So I decided maybe that was not such a good idea. However, the I ran the Browns Canyon almost all the time.
Nice.
It was easy to get to. It was fast to get to. It was a quick run. And so I ran that one really very, very regularly.
There's a lot of you've got to be on your game to run that. There's some good rapids in there and a lot of rock dodging.
Yes. Yeah. And some things that end up swirling in such a way that you really have to be on your dime to make sure that you don't end up being slammed into the wall.
Back then in the 70s, Brian, you know, today we have cam straps, these metal buckles with straps. But back in the 70s, were you using hoopies or were you, you know, tying down your frame to the raft with some sort of cordage? What were you using for that? Do you remember?
Yeah, I was mostly cam straps. that was one of those things that came relatively late into the field.
Yep.
You know, you could early, you know, late on, you could get lots of cam straps at for a reasonable amount of money and tie everything down, and that's always fairly safe.
Right.
You know, what I did run, I didn't run the I didn't go through the steep, some of the steeper rivers, but I did. I ran the three. It was the Three Points.
Yes.
River, also the Five Points River, which were outrageously dangerous.
Okay. Hey, did you
spinning around, slamming into the wall, generally flipping the the trips that the commercial companies were running.
Yep.
But again, it was one of those things where all of it was fast.
Oh yeah.
And so you'd go screaming down through there, and if you could stay on top of it, the ride was outstanding.
Uh huh. Did you enter the FIBARC races at all?
No.
Okay.
I had this daughter, Shana, who kind of got in the way of my wild rafting above a certain time level.
Okay. So children led to a little bit of sensibility, I guess.
Yeah.
In a way.
I was not totally crazy. I was not irresponsible. So it did get in the, you know, having children did get in the way of my high level river rafting.
Right, you had to settle for low water San Juan or low water Deso Gray or something a little more tame, I suppose.
Well, not that low. I mean, you know, I still ran the Grand Canyon three times.
With your kids?
No.
Okay. Hey.
I had this very helpful wife who was willing to give me the chance to get out there and just, you know, rip out on the river, on the rivers, up to a certain point, and then we just decided that wasn't,
yeah,
it wasn't responsible for our marriage.
Hey, Brian, Shana mentioned the Dolores. When did you run the Dolores? Do you remember?
It was probably around
that'd be the mid 1970s, 1975 to 1978, something like that.
Yeah. In that range.
Okay. It was very popular there in the mid 70s. For a while.
Yeah, well, you know, you could only get, there were only so many rivers that were runnable.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you picked the ones that were available, and with that, I was I was a pretty gung-ho rafting guy.
Okay.
What the hell was the name of that rapid?
Snaggletooth.
Snaggletooth. Yeah.
Tell me about Snaggletooth.
there was a time when I was willing to run Snaggletooth at any river level.
Okay.
And just, you know, the thing was huge. You know, it was just like, you know, up over the top of your head.
Wow.
Huge. And but you just, you know, you'd try not to hit it when it was too high, because it could really flip you. And, you know, flipping in the middle of that one was really, it sucked.
Yeah.
plus, there was this raft. There was this raft, or this over. There was this overhang. This overhang thing that would get you, even if the rest was not so bad.
Okay.
So, you know, we just. You know, I told Shane not to run that part. You know, it's like, you know, you look at your daughter and you say, Shane, don't do this one.
And she's like, but Dad, you did it. I should be able to try it.
And she's smooth. She listens to what I have to say. And, you know, she keeps herself out of the craziest parts of the river.
Good. Good. Well, you've taught her well.
Yeah. That's... I believe that she has. Maybe I taught her well.
Yeah.
She learned well.
Nice. So clearly it was important to teach your children about river running, and that's pretty neat. Shana mentioned Lodore, the gates of Lodore, up in Dinosaur National Monument. What do you remember about that trip up there? And there's a rapid in there called Hell's Half Mile, and all kinds of other really fun rapids in Split Mountain and Whirlpool Canyon and Echo Park. What do you remember about that country and those river trips?
I remember having a great time up there.
Nice.
It was high. The water level was good and high. And so, Hell's Half Mile was, you know, compared to the run that Shona and I did on Hell's Half Mile a couple of years ago, this thing was relatively out of control, and you'd go over the top, and it would. Just, you know, it would start out by throwing you up in the air. And, it's rare to find that much water in there these days.
Yes.
So there was that. This was one of the very first rivers that I ran.
Okay.
At that time. And so I was really surprised by the whole experience. Got tossed in the air, came back down, kept going with a place with this just great flying feel. And then the rest of the river was very, you know, was really high. So the swirls in the rest of the river in the lower part were way more exciting than I was ready for psychologically.
Okay. I wonder if we're blending a little bit in with Grand Canyon, because if you were running the Grand Canyon in 81, 82, 83 was high water. But by the time you got to the Grand Canyon in the early 80s, it sounds like you were on the top of your game. I mean, very well versed with how to run a boat and how to rig a boat and how to plan multi-day river trips. Is that right?
I thought, for one thing, the water was real high the first time I went down there. And so I discovered things like how do you surf an Avon Pro? It was like, the Beach Boys. She's my little dude scoop. Well, it's like that. And, you have 12, 15-foot water. You throw the boat into that water at a 45-degree angle, and it picks the front of the boat up, turns it, and then surfs it across three-quarters of the rest of the rapid.
Hmm.
And, I was good. I learned how to do that, and that's something that, I don't know very many people who can surf an Avon Pro.
And have a good time doing it.
Or perhaps would want to. Yeah, or have a good time doing it.
Yeah.
We were also running a 22-foot pontoon raft, one of those ancient things from the 50s.
Yeah, a snout.
Yeah, that one, managing to keep that thing right side up was also a high. I didn't run that one a lot, but it was definitely a high skill.
Did you have a motor for that, or did you use very long oars?
We used very long oars.
Okay. That is a hard boat. It's a big boat, it's a heavy boat, and it's a challenge to get around.
Yeah, I did learn how to row it, because there were two of us that were rowing boats, and it was so difficult to row that we just had to swap rowing the boats, because that's the only way we came up with enough strength to do it.
Yeah. Did you build your own frame for that boat?
No, this was actually owned by some people sort of from down in the Four Corners.
Okay.
And they built their own frame, which was huge.
Yeah.
It was a young woman who came with us, who rode the thing, who was nowhere near, she was relatively lightweight. She was nowhere near big enough to row that thing in high water in the Grand Canyon.
Do you remember her name?
I don't.
Okay. All right. But it's nice to have a boat that big to carry so much gear.
No. No, I wouldn't.
No?
If I had the choice to run, whether to run one of those or not, it would be not.
Oh, yeah, I'd never run one. they carry a lot of gear, but that comes at a price.
Yeah, well, but, the thing was, it was, what was it then? I mean, there was all this stuff hanging down below the frame.
Yep.
So, there was all this stuff, and it hung down, and, you'd have to deal with supporting it, and getting it so it was raftable. It was just an outrageous amount of work, and for the people who were in charge of rowing it, you just fought your way through the process constantly to keep it sort of right side up and separate from the rowing, the rowing frame. So, it was one of those things that was, if you wanted to learn to row boats, you take one of those, and it was just outrageously difficult.
Yeah.
And you very easy to go upside down. And so, it just was not a rowable boat from any standpoint. But it's an opportunity to learn how to do it. And it was one of those things where it's a chance to, it's like learning how to drive a dump truck or something.
Yeah, that's good.
You get a chance to learn how to keep the right side up. You keep it, all the other stuff that goes along with it. And, by the time you've done it 5 days, you do okay.
Yes. Did you have any trouble missing the pull ends on that high water trip in Grand Canyon?
Lifting the what?
The pull ends. I'm thinking, were there places like, I don't know, Red Wall Cavern or Vasey's Paradise or Nankoweap or Saddle Canyon, where you wanted to stop, but the river wouldn't let you stop. You just kept right on going by and couldn't get to shore.
Yes. That was, that was a very difficult boat to row. And, learning to do landings in an Avon Pro is not trivial either.
Right.
With that thing, it was terrible. It was terrible. It just, it would smash into the rocks. It would smash into the walls. It would, it's just not a favorable device.
Hmm.
And yet, did you have a hard time? Sure, you have to, but you have to learn how to deal with it.
Right.
You want to be, you want to run the river at that high of a water level. You just end up having to learn how to do it.
That's right.
I mean, I have several friends who told me that they were impressed with me because I could row better than anybody and read better than anybody they knew.
Nice.
So, you know, there's a point where, you know, you get, you know, you figure it out and you keep going with it. And, you know, you thrash it around. And, you know, you eventually learn to, you know, to pull out when you need to pull out and, you know, make the stops that you need to stop. And, it's a whole series of skills that you learn.
Right.
You know, a lot of people never develop those skills. You know, they're just pounding into the walls.
Right.
But you know, if you know what you're doing, you learn how to make landings when you need to make landings.
Mm-hmm. What else do you remember about those 1981, 1983 Grand Canyon River trips?
I remember that they were the rapids were frightening in their size and the speed with which they could slam into things. And so, like Granite Rapid, you have this opportunity, you come cooking around the corner, you can't see it, you can't really hear it, but it's a perfectly level line with this water that's throwing itself up in the air.
Cool. Yeah.
50 feet in the air.
Hmm.
And it's a noise like a big large jet roaring. And you come cooking around the corner and you can't see what you're doing. You can't tell what you're supposed to, you know, where the thing goes. And all you could do is just try to post yourself at the entrance and hope that the thing is not going to do something really awful to you.
Hmm.
And then, you know, pick your line and end up going over the top of this giant drop that hopefully you pick a line that will run you through it safely. And with granite, the main run is way off to the right, and so there's no easy run. You know, it is rugged. No matter how you enter it.
Hmm.
And so you just pick your best run. You hope. You know, if you're a praying man, you pray that it will get you down through that pile of stuff safely. And then you hope that you'll be all right, and that you'll end up being able to run the river reasonably smoothly, and without something really terrible happening to you.
Right.
And you know, it's It's pretty. There's really. There's a lot of rapids like that at that water level.
Yeah.
So. And then you just, you know, ultimately you end up, you know, running it blind and just dropping over the edge and hoping that it's going to be okay.
In 1983, for a week or so, well, maybe a little less than that, the river was closed as Glen Canyon Dam could no longer tolerate the amount of water that was going through the spillway side tubes. Were you on the river then, or were you before or after that? Do you remember?
I was just slightly after.
Okay. So what was Crystal?
I have a story for you that you're really going to like.
Yes, please.
You know, they had, you know, the dam people were trying to avoid having the river just tear that wall out of the side of the canyon.
Right, the outlet works, the spillways.
Right, and if that went, it was going to be catastrophic.
Right.
Well, the guy who figured that one out was my father.
Okay.
He worked for the dam people. He got a job working for them later in his career.
Okay.
And he figured out how to raise the level of the dam to the point where there was going to be enough headspace for the thing not to be totally destroyed when it filled all the way up with water.
Wow, that's pretty good.
It was the wooden boards,
right,
they put up. That mm-hmm. was like his.
What was his name?
Dave Maiden.
Dave, okay. Nice. So he came up with the idea of, hey, let's just put up some plywood here and we can raise the level of the reservoir and save the dam. Okay. Very good. Yeah. So.
And unlike most things invented by people who work for the government, his worked. his fix actually functioned.
Yes. Yeah, it saved the structure, no doubt. What do you remember of Crystal Rapid when you got there in 1983?
What I remember of Crystal in 83 was that it was huge and it was fast and wasn't obvious that there was a safe place to go through. That, it had changed to the point where no longer a safe river.
Mm.
And that just really the run through there was it was dangerous. It was it was frightening. You know, it wasn't obvious how a person could run it and not get knocked back while running it. I actually ended up we didn't run it.
Did you portage your boats around the side of it then?
Uh-huh.
A lot of trips did that.
Yeah, at that point, a lot of trips did that, and it was just one of those things of, you know, well, you know, you get there, and you look at it, and you look at it and you think, oh my God, how am I going to get around this? And the thing is that it wants to suck you in. It wants to slam you against that giant wall. It wants to suck you in and make and do nasty things to you with that great big hill. The water, and the only other option is not to run it.
Right, is to portage. Yeah.
Yeah, because the thing was that you know, on the left, you know, in the center and on the left side, you have this big old nasty thing that if you didn't succeed in running it well, you know, you were going to be running this just nasty rapid that was going to go on for a couple of miles. You know, in retrospect, I don't think it was quite as bad as it looked.
Okay.
But I certainly chose not to run it at the time.
So I wanted to ask you if you remembered a place called the Granite Narrows between Tepetz Creek and Deer Creek Falls. Because at high water, and the water had to be pretty high, and you might not have seen it there, the river starts going sideways, comes up on river left, and sheets across to these cliffs on river right, and then dives down. So it's sort of like a corkscrew kind of thing laid on its side. The water comes up on the left, sheets across the river to the right to the wall, and then drops in. And does that ring a bell at all?
Not really. I mean, both, Tepetz and Deer Creek, my remembrance of that was that they were both easy to deal with.
Yeah. And yes, that's right.
Getting out of the water at Tepetz Creek to look at it was easy. Getting out of the water at Deer Creek was, if anything, easier there still. So I'm not an expert on those two rivers.
Okay.
You know,
no worries. I just wanted to check on that.
As far as things being sucked under, I don't remember that particular.
Okay, and again, if you ran it at 50 or 60,000, you might not have seen that. I think it kicks in about 70 or 80,000, and it really gave river runners a challenge when the water ever, you know, got up that high and people were boating. Did you take out at Diamond Creek, or did you go all the way out to the reservoir out there at Pierce Ferry?
We went all the way out.
Okay. Okay.
Well, for one thing, we had that giant raft that we had to deal with.
Right.
So it was easier to get out later. It was quite expensive back in those days to have a boat that size hauled out to the lake.
Okay.
So what we did is we just we just got a couple of people who, you know, were total privates. And just ask them if they would be willing to pull us out, and they said, "Oh, okay." So we saved what would otherwise have been a fairly expensive trip.
Yeah. No, that's good to have friends help on things like that. It keeps the costs under control.
Yeah,
Brian.
Total strangers.
Oh, nice.
It was one of those things where you just sort of managed to get some strangers to hand, you know, haul you out.
Fun.
We'd left the truck and stuff down at the lake. And we just let them haul us over to where it was, and had to deal with getting it out of that giant raft out of the water, which was okay, and it all worked out fine.
Good. Brian, did you get a chance to boat some rivers with your daughter Shayna? What did that mean to you as a father?
I think it's really one of the most special things that I've ever had in my life. You know, she's very good at it. She thinks very clearly about the best way to run rivers. She has a group of friends that are just really outstanding human beings to run with.
Nice.
And, you know, you have the opportunity to, run together and, it's just really one of those things that's just truly special.
Nice.
Yes, it's very nice.
Yeah. Well, we've been talking here about an hour and a quarter. Time has just zipped on by. Is there anything else you'd like to recount about your time boating?
There's a couple of things. One is that, you know, I have run some really special rivers, such as the some real tough ones up in Idaho. And I've, in the process of doing that, I've learned how to maneuver in some just really tough and challenging rivers. And it looks different, it feels different. I still feel that set of rivers is very different from running in Idaho or Montana. And I feel very lucky to have had the opportunity to do that.
Are you thinking of the Maine salmon and maybe Hell's Canyon of the Snake River?
No. He's talking about the Selway and the Middle Fork.
Selway and the Middle Fork. Thank you. Those are beautiful rivers.
Yeah. And the Selway in particular.
Uh-huh.
Is not only challenging, but also one of the most challenging rivers out there.
Okay.
Other than the Grand Canyon. And you know, the other is, you know, I have this love for the Arkansas.
Hmm.
And you know, there's a couple of places where there's these whirlpools that are just amazing. And you know, there's a lot of it that has really unique things about it. And because it's, you know, 2 hours, 2.5 hours to get there, you can really rip it through there in some difficult stuff. And it's one of those things that I always thought was delightfully challenging, was rivers that really fought my skills. You know, Grand Canyon is certainly that way, but you know, getting close to the some of the really the tough ones on the Arkansas, finding tough little bits like that. Catching it at the right height can have, you know, some really challenging rafting.
Yes.
And I've always enjoyed that.
Nice.
So.
Nice.
Yeah. I've always, I think, very lucky to be able to raft the challenge, you know, the hard ones, and, you know, learn to, you know, make the absolute best use of those tough ones.
Brian, I wanted to ask you how the river impacted your glass blowing. How did the river impact your art?
Well, my glass blowing, I think, was the glass is one of those things that flows and is also a challenge. Especially from a flowing standpoint, and so it ended up being a real challenge to get that smooth, get it to flow from, you know, through the glass and down to the finished product. And, you know, I always really enjoyed the fact that it was a big challenge on that level.
Nice. Yeah. So in a way, did river running make your glass blowing easier?
Yeah, it did. It was, there were certainly more. There were some difficult parts because. I had to find the flow of the glass and the glow of the glass and bring it all together. And being able to get the whole thing to flow, getting the whole thing to begin with the flow of the glass and wind up with the finished pieces was really a real challenge.
Nice. Well, maybe this is a good place to wrap this interview up. What do you think?
I think it's a good time.
Okay. Well, with that, this will conclude an oral history interview with Brian Matem and his daughter, Shayna. My name is Tom Martin. Today is Tuesday, December 15th, 2020. And Brian, thank you so very much for this.
My pleasure.